Full committee hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, oversight hearing on VA budget modeling and methodologies, June 30th, 2005, will come to order. We're here this morning to identify fiscal year 2005 funding requirements for the VA health system and to develop the picture for 2006, 2007, 2008, and beyond. And in a continuation of last week's robust discussion with Dr. Perlin, we will further examine the process used by VA to forecast health care demand among America's veterans so that we can ensure both today's veterans and the veterans of the future have a sound health care system. I want to thank Secretary Jim Nicholson for his leadership over the last week. As we have worked through this challenge, we recognize that you have inherited a pretty tough problem. It's clear to me that Secretary Nicholson and the Bush administration, in your response to this, are very serious about caring for America's veterans. And to Undersecretary Perlin, who's in the trenches of the VA's Health Administration, I offer and extend my gratitude to you for stepping up to the plate and your candor, not only in public but also in private. As chairman, getting the VA budget right is about the most important thing that I can do. It's the most important thing this committee can do. Without a good budget, how can we provide the good health care for our nation's veterans? So we're going to get it right. This entire committee is committed to working closely with you and your staff as we move forward in developing an accurate budget for the department, not just here in 05 in your final quarter, but also in 06 with whatever may be required for a budget amendment on 06 that can be developed with you through the August, maybe even into the September time frame as we finalize the 06 budget. Earlier, I had made some comments not only at a press conference, but also in particular at a hearing last week, that in this town, everybody seems to have a number with regard to the VA budget. So the American Legion has a number, the Independent Budget has a number, VA comes up with a number, OMB comes up with a number, Lane Evans has a number, we've got a number, everybody seems to have a number.
Except ours was right.
What we learned is that the you have individuals of whom you employ, actuarialists on contract. We learned that the model that you use is a model that's also similarly used by the private sector, but we stress the model. And we use bad data. And perhaps the assumptions were not right. And they weren't right. Improper variances give a bad result. So over the last 4 or 5 years, you're pretty fortunate to get it pretty close. This year, we're pretty far off. Recognizing that the 05 budget was crafted using data in 2002, we weren't even in the war in Iraq in 2002. So while we're looking at Mr. Secretary today, we recognize that we'll work directly with you, and we're going to extend our oversight to make sure how do we get this model correct in 06 and 07 and the budgets beyond. If you're not able to do the risk adjustments or not able to do these changes, we're going to have to do it. We just want to make sure that we get the dollar as accurate. And I know that Chairman Walsh and Chet Edwards, the ranking member on appropriations, feels the same way. And I did have to say to Chet last night, Chet Edwards, my good friend, I asked him what the Powerball was. And he said, he came to me and said, why? And I said, tell me what the Powerball number is. And he said, I don't understand. And I said, well, if you can be more accurate in guessing what the VA budget number would be than the VA, then you should know what the Powerball number is. So I extend to him some congratulations. It's also kind of interesting that when I look at your model and the sophistication of your model, and I look at what the Independent Budget did, and when I look at what the American Legion did in an unsophisticated process, They were more accurate. They were more accurate than you. And that's the reality of where we are. And I appreciate you coming here today. We're most interested in hearing about these workaround solutions, and we're also most interested in hearing what you have to say today and any requests you may have of us to take action. I yield now to Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also look forward to working with you to develop why we got into this situation and what your plans are for addressing the shortfall this year or next. I also want to hear from the VA as to what you plan to do to prevent this from ever happening again. I disagree with the comments made by the Secretary earlier this week. This is certainly a problem and definitely a crisis. I'm angry, and I know many of our colleagues are angry. That is an issue of credibility, the credibility of what you tell us here in Congress, and the credibility of the budgetary process involving the VA. You blame your budgetary model after year for underestimating in your February budget submissions the number of veterans who will seek care. I don't understand why you've been, why you are expressing surprise when you underestimated this again. VA assures us that this is a $1 billion shortfall that is not affecting adequate care to our veterans. That's not correct. The Democratic staff have compiled a snapshot of how this shortfall has been affecting patient care. And I ask that it be entered into the record, Mr. Chairman, part of our
proceeding. Without objection.
We are still waiting answers from your February budgetary hearing. And I'm still waiting for the answers to a simple survey that we sent out months ago to gauge the fiscal health of the networks. The answers to these questionnaires and surveys have been held by the VA, and they won't release them. Yet you told us in February that the VA's information was our information. This doesn't seem like that's been the case. We found out about the shortfall at last week's hearing. It appears you knew about it in April. You claim that you have been forthcoming, but this has clearly not been the case. You're not doing anyone favors, at least for the VA, by not leveling with us. We need honesty and accuracy from the VA so that we can get our job done and help you as well in your job. I think we've got a lot of work here to do, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you holding this hearing. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Would you like an opening statement? Secretary, I didn't see anyone. All right, Mr. Filner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being here. Mr. Chairman, I found your opening comments bordering on irresponsible. You said we got to get the budget right. We've been trying to do that for months, in fact, for years. You laughed at us. You laughed at the independent budget. Now you're comparing the independent budget with Powerball figures. I mean, if you look at the record, the independent budget has been right for years and years and years. They have a worthwhile procedure. It's a professional analytic job. Those of us who have used it have turned out to be right. And I would, you ought to admit it rather than just saying all of a sudden that we ought to get it right. We've been telling you this for months and months. We've tried on the floor of the House to raise the budget. We have been ruled out of order. We've tried to, in committees, do it. We tried it yesterday on the floor to do it. And we've been ruled out of order each time. You talked about the Secretary's leadership. I cannot believe you used that word. We not only were not kept informed of the shortfall here, the Secretary has said, and I assume he's going to say it today, there's no crisis here. There's no diminution in quality. We have lists and lists and lists of shortfalls at every single medical center in this nation. We have testimony of veterans who have to wait for months and months in line. In San Diego, where I am, there's 1,000 people almost waiting for their appointment. There's 231 vacancies. You're telling that the secretary that's leadership. This secretary ought to resign for how he dealt with us today, in this situation, and how he's handling this crisis. He is not a leader. He is failing the veterans. He's failing this nation. And I think he ought to inform us today of his resignation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Stern? Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just allow me say a few words. I appreciate the Secretary coming up here, and it's the first opportunity I've had to talk to him, and I appreciate his honesty and his staff forthright in trying to give us the information we need. You know, I guess some of the questions we now have with the Senate passing approval of $1.5 billion yesterday in emergency funding, is that all you need, and can you project in the future what else you'll need? So I guess getting a firm handle on the number and how much is contributing to this, the reservists and the guardsmen, perhaps even discussing with us what the actuarially model that you're using, does it just continue to miss the mark or does it have to be modified? And, you know, I think many of us follow these hearings, and I know that Dr. Perlin in April 12th, who was the Undersecretary for Health, he wrote to the Senate VA committee, quote, "We do feel confident that the VHA has sufficient resources for the remainder of 2005. So those are his quotes in April 2005, April 12th. And so then we suddenly hear about this. It makes us a little concerned. So I know that you welcome, like we do, the opportunity to explain. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Michaud?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, I'm very disturbed by VA's recent disclosure of a huge budget shortfall. VA hospitals across the nation are using drastic cost-cutting measures to cover this shortfall. I do not agree with you that the VA can continue to provide timely, highly qualified health care for veterans with this budget. I do not agree with you that siphoning off funds for medical equipment in vital maintenance is simply, as you put it, and I quote, deferring non-critical capital expense for a few months, end of quote. For example, the VA hospital in Vermont had to shut its three operating rooms this Monday because the heating, ventilation, air conditioning system was broken and has not been repaired because maintenance dollars were transferred to cover the budget shortfall. The failure to repair needed equipment is hurting patient care and safety. The cost-cutting measures are not just putting off maintenance and buying medical equipment. VA managers across the nation are deliberately delaying the hiring of key clinical staff by at least 3 months just to cover the shortfall. Mr. Secretary, veterans are being left behind now under your watch, because the VA is putting them on a waiting list and eliminating services to cover huge budgetary holes. These drastic actions are not, as you said, simply part of good government. Your approach to this shortfall is hurting veterans, and it's wrong. A better approach, and the only approach, is to assure funding for veterans' health care. I do not buy the argument in putting the blame on poor modeling. You've known, and this committee has known, and we have stated over and over again, the cost of this war has an added cost to taking care of our veterans. I do not know, and it appears you have not been listening about the cost of the war and as it relates to the veterans. And this is not a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. This is an issue about taking care of our veterans. And I've been reading articles recently, members of the other party, Senator Larry Craig, and I quote, "I was as frustrating to me and an embarrassment," end of quote. Jim Walsh talks about the Congress needs to provide additional resources now because we're at war. The chair of the House Appropriation Committee, Jerry Lewis, says, and I quote, about you with the administration withholding the information, and I quote, "It borders on stupidity," end of quote. It might not be a crisis to you. If this administration thinks Social Security is in crisis because it lacks the funding beyond 2052, the Veterans Administration lacks funding today. And it might not be a crisis to you, but it is for those veterans who need the services today. If it's not a crisis to some of them, it definitely is hurting some of them as well. And I implore you, Mr. Secretary, and I look forward to your testimony, to correct this problem that we currently are facing. And it is a problem. And I know, Mr. Secretary, you served as a Republican National Committee chairman. This is not a partisan position. It's okay when you were party chair, but this is not a partisan position. Caring for our veterans who put their lives on the line is extremely important. And this committee and members of both sides of the aisle have come together in the past to help our veterans. Your predecessor worked with both sides of the aisle on this issue, putting veterans first ahead of politics. And I hope that you will do the same. Your record has not shown that. And during the questions, I'll ask you specific questions. And I'll expect they're worded in such a manner that you can give a yes or no answer. You have, in my opinion, disappointed a lot of members of both sides of the aisle. You have a lot of explaining. And I know members of both sides would respect you more if you will be up front with us, honest with us, and do not try to push the blame on modeling. The buck stops initially with you and ultimately with the President of the United States. So I look forward to your testimony, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Michaud. Mr. Moran, you're now recognized for an opening statement.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I appreciate you holding the hearing today. Mr. Secretary, thank you for your willingness to appear before our committee today, and I hope we can have a worthwhile discussion. Last week in this room, it was revealed that the department is failing in funding our veterans' health care in fiscal year 2005, and since then, we've learned that the budget situation for the coming fiscal year is even more difficult, which I think likely will impair the ability of the VA to meet the needs of veterans in coming years. Americans, veterans, as you know, and I know you believe this, deserve the very best. And I strongly believe that the VA healthcare system must be available for all veterans and to provide them with nothing less than excellent service. Clearly, inadequate resources threaten to harm the quality of the service the VA provides and hinders our ability to meet our commitments to those who honorably served. It is imperative that we act to rectify this problem. I think this means that initially we need to gain accurate numbers, exactly how much funding is needed to meet the current demands, and then we must provide the necessary appropriations to meet those demands. I call upon my colleagues in the administration to fully fund veterans' health care. Making up for the shortfall by delaying spending or borrowing money only serves to postpone the problem while reducing the quality of service. Immediate action is needed to ensure that the VA fulfills its mission, that all veterans receive health care that they have earned. And as public servants, we have the responsibility to set aside partisanship to keep this promise. As more and more of our troops return home from combat, we must make certain that we do what needs to be done to fix this problem in the coming years so that the situation does not reoccur. And I'm concerned that current forecasting models used to determine the demand and develop budgets has proven inadequate. This process needs to be examined to ensure that Congress and the Department have accurate information from which we can make sound budget decisions. Mr. Secretary, I welcome your testimony on this topic, and I look forward to working with you and your colleagues in the department to see that we meet the needs of our nation's veterans. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank the gentleman for his opening statement. Mr. Strickland, you're recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, I come from Southern Ohio, and down there we have a saying about the chickens finally coming home to roost, and I think that's what we're experiencing here as we consider the shortfall of the VA budget. The fact is that people are beating up on you, and I guess I can kind of understand that, but the ultimate person responsible for what we face here is the President of the United States. He's the Commander-in-Chief. He makes decisions about war and peace, sending our soldiers into battle. And the fact is that none of us are really surprised at what's happened here. We sent our soldiers to war without body armor. Poor planning, lack of planning. It took months and months and months for our soldiers to have access to up-armored Humvees. And I think probably even today, There are soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan that are not properly equipped. Just absolutely egregious mistakes in planning. I'm not surprised about this. Our former secretary sat right where you're sitting, sir, and told us that he had asked the president for $1 billion more than the president was willing to include in his budget for VA health care. He's no longer with us. Our former chairman of this committee, Chris Smith, served on this committee for 24 years, almost a quarter of a century, was stripped of his chair's position and purged from this committee because he spoke out regarding the inappropriate or inadequate funding for VA health care. We all know that. Every one of us sitting here knows that. So why should we be surprised? We're not surprised. Management efficiencies were built into the budget. No one said how these management efficiencies were going to actually save money, but they were built into the budget as a way to provide fewer resources. And now the president apparently is going to continue to ask us, it's not going to happen, to increase the cost of prescription drugs for our veterans, and to impose an annual user fee on our veterans, and to create categories of veterans that are excluded from VA health care, even some who may be combat-decorated veterans. Now, we've got a shortfall this year. I think it's going to be taken care of. Thank God for what the Senate did yesterday. I hope the House takes action today. But what about next year? Well, we're being told that next year the budget shortfall may be $1.6 billion, but that's assuming that the president's going to get the onerous increases that he wants to place on the backs of veterans in terms of user fees. And it's not going to happen. This Congress, my Republican friends, are not going to support that. You might as well just get that out of the budget request. It's not going to happen. This Congress is not going to, during a time of war, increase the cost of medicines or it's just not going to happen. And so we're really talking about next year probably over $2.5 billion in shortfall. What we're asking is just some honest information. That's all we're asking for. And I would just close my remarks, Mr. Secretary, by saying this. We hear a lot of talk in this town about morality. We really do. We talk about morality in terms of stem cell research and morality in terms of abortion and morality in terms of gay marriage. I wish we would talk about morality in terms of keeping our promises to the men and women who have fought our wars, served our country, sacrificed their bodies, and too many times families have actually lost loved ones. That's a moral issue. It's a moral issue if we choose to give tax breaks to the richest people in this country, many like me, who have never served. We give tax breaks to them, and we shortchange our veterans. I think that's a moral issue. I wish the president would accept responsibility as the commander-in-chief to not only look after our soldiers when they're on active duty, but to also assume responsibility for those once they've come home. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Strickland. Mr. Brown, you're recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Secretary, for joining us here today to further explore the budget shortfall for the remainder of the fiscal year 2005 and additional actuarial and budgetary challenges for future years. I think it is fair to say that last week's testimony provided by Dr. Perlin, the Undersecretary of Health at VA, came as a bit of a surprise to us on this committee. Certainly the extent to which the Department has already programmed 2006 rollover funds and capital assets fund should be of concern to all of us here. I hope that through your appearance here today, Mr. Secretary, that you can provide us with a more concentrated look at the VA's current year's funding requirements and hard dollars and provide us some reassurance that a more permanent and reliable dialogue can be established between this committee and administration so that we might avert a similar situation in the future. As I mentioned during last week's hearing, the numbers that we discussed here are important, because there are real consequences in all of our districts. The consequences of chronological underestimating the funding requirements, in my mind, is simply unacceptable. Again, I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for digging deep on this issue and having the courage to address this in a head-on way. Mr. Secretary, I look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Hooley, recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being here. As we go into the future, there are some things I hope you would do. Number one is look at when you're, whatever model you use, would you look at not only the cost of living, but the fact is more veterans are coming into the system. Healthcare costs are rising much faster than the cost of living. And the services we deliver to veterans are a little bit different and more expensive than what we have at a regular hospital, and that's why we have VA hospitals. I have one last request, is that you listen to what's going on at the hospitals, which will help you in trying to figure out whether you have a shortfall now or not. And let me just go over some things that have happened in the Portland VA hospital. That's the one I know about. First of all, Portland has delayed all non-emergency surgery by at least 6 months. Recent visitors to the short care stay unit were surprised to see a handwritten sign declaring that due to budget issues, we can no longer supply meals to patients and asking patients to bring meals from homes. The hospital has reduced staffing and is now short 150 hospital staff, including nurses, physicians, and social workers. As a result of budget cutting for staff, the VA has cut the number of hospital beds available for care of veterans. For the fiscal year 2005, the facility needed $13 million for medical and clinical equipment, but received $2 million. I believe that any soldier who puts his life on the line or her life on the line shouldn't have to worry about getting health care when they return from battle. How are we supposed to provide adequate health care to these new veterans that are coming in every day when we can't meet the needs of our current veterans? I think our returning soldiers deserve better. I think our current veterans deserve better. And I'm looking forward to you working to correct the VA budget. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Hooley. Mr. Miller, you're recognized for an opening statement.
I have an opening statement I'd like to enter into the record.
Your statement shall be entered into the record. No objection. Mr. Rez, recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I also have a full statement, if I could enter it into the record.
Without objection, your written statement will be entered in the record.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention, welcome, Mr. Secretary. In fact, I consider the Secretary a friend, because back in the first initial campaign, he represented President Bush very well in debates, and I did so, debated him representing then Vice President Gore, so I consider him a friend. I respect him as a fellow veteran because I know that he cares very much about the country, and now being Secretary, I know he cares about veterans. I do hope, Mr. Secretary, that you will do everything that you can to communicate to those that make decisions along with you about the budget for the Veterans Administration. I know, having heard Secretary Principe here tell us that he had in fact asked for $1.2 billion more than he had been authorized by OMB, and last week we heard testimony from Dr. Perlin about the severe cutbacks in this year's budget. Seems to me like we shouldn't be surprised about that when he doesn't get the amount of money. As our chairman says, you know, yes, everybody's got a number. There's an independent budget, it's got a number, the VA has a number, he's got a number, our ranking member's got a number. But I think after this fiasco, all veterans around the country have the administration's number. And it's unconscionable in my mind that we find the money for billions of dollars to go and build neighborhoods and do all the things that we're doing in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, and we can't find the money to fund our health care for our veterans. It's unconscionable that we can go to the deficit and build a budget that increases the deficit so it'll be within the realms here in Congress of this artificial budget, but we're unwilling to do that for the veterans. So it's not just the Secretary who's at fault here and who's to blame. It's all of us for allowing this to happen. When the chairman wants to know if anybody can predict the Powerball like my good friend and colleague Chet Edwards I can't predict the Powerball, but I can tell you this. Decisions like this, our inability to have guts enough to fund veterans programs like they ought to be, puts the veterans behind the eight ball. So the hell with the Powerball, it's the eight ball that we ought to be fighting against, because that's where we're putting our veterans. And finally, I would like to say that the system doesn't suffer in this process. It's our veterans that are suffering, our veterans that can't get the health care, our veterans that are getting letters that they're showing me. And I was just in the district over the weekend and had a previously scheduled meeting with veterans. And they showed me the letters, and they said it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And as we're seeing, one of them had been wounded in Iraq 9 months ago. Had been discharged because of those wounds. Those are the people we ought to be caring about. Those are the people we ought to be putting first in this line, instead of having to make up for it in a very embarrassing way like we are now. So with that, Mr. Secretary, I don't know if you ever wondered what it's like to be the meat at a barbecue, but I think you're about to see that. So welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman for his opening statement. Mr. Bozeman, recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you and Mr. Evans for holding this hearing, and certainly it comes at a very critical time. We had a hearing last week or earlier this week, sometime not too long ago, about modeling. And I know that it really is very difficult to do that. I was in Germany not too long ago and saw a young man that had lost both his legs below his waist. And literally he was coming out of anesthesia. He'd had that happen to him the night before. And he asked me about two things. He wanted to tell his story, apologize because he had slurred speech, you know, from coming out of the anesthesia. But he wanted to know about his wife and family and was reassured that he'd be in the United States the next day. And then the other thing he wanted to know was, you know, would he be able to walk again? And I could look him in the eye and reassure him that, yeah, you know, we've got the technology, you know, we've spent the money, you know, we're doing the things that it takes to literally provide him with the finest care that we could do that. My uncle died last week. I was at his funeral. He was a World War II guy and had been ill for the last 6 months and probably had spent more in health care dollars in the last 6 months than he had in his entire life. So I understand, you know, we've got all this stuff going on, and yet we got to do a better job than what we're doing. You know, this committee is, you know, everybody here, and I think you can hear it. Again, you know, things might get such that you know, you can get asked some tough questions. But everybody on this committee truly is committed to the veterans, and this committee has had we're the ones that push things forward on both sides. We've got a great system now, and like I say, we're committed to continue that. To be honest, I think the only thing that we're missing in this equation is somebody from OMB to to explain, you know, which maybe they're not willing to do that. But like I say, at some point, I'd really like to hear from them, you know, what's happened on their part. So, again, thank you all very much for having the hearing. Thank you all for coming.
Ms. Berkley, you're recognized for an opening statement. Thank you, Ms. Bozeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being here. I have a really great relationship with my veterans. I've grown to love them, and I think they really have been terrific to me. My World War II vets kind of look at me as a daughter, and my Vietnam vets and those that came after, many of them, because people returned to Las Vegas because it was such a booming town. I went to high school and college with them. So I have more than a constituent congresswoman relationship with many of my vets. They're truly friends, lifelong friends. They're going to be friends of mine long after I finish my service to our country. I can barely look at these people now because I know that we're not doing right by them. You know the needs that I have in Southern Nevada. I've got 80-year-old veterans standing in 110 degrees temperature waiting for a shuttle to pick them up to take them to one of 10 temporary VA facilities so they can get their health care. Standing out in 110 degrees for anybody for more than a few minutes is a very difficult thing to do, and yet my veterans who need these health care services so much do it, and they're not complaining too much because they have been assured and they've been told by me and your predecessor that we are in line to get a full VA medical center that includes a long-term care facility, which we are in desperate need of, a VA hospital, which we are in desperate need of, and an outpatient clinic. Because, as you know, our outpatient clinic, after being in service for 5 years, was declared structurally unsound and the building was condemned. We have worked very hard, and the CARE study, as you know, bore out the fact that we needed these facilities desperately for the 200,000 veterans that live in Nevada, 50,000 of whom get their health care needs met, rightly so, by the VA. I've got 500 veterans from Iraqi Freedom who have already accessed our health care system in Nevada, such as it is. I need to get assurances from you during your testimony that we are not going to fix this shortfall with a temporary fix and take that money out of capital, our capital building fund. We need those facilities, and this emergency needs to be taken care of, and we need to get our VA funding on sure footing. And we can't steal from Peter to pay Paul. The other thing I am very concerned of, and I appreciate Ms. Hooley talking about her facilities in Portland and the challenges there, because all of us are dealing with our veterans on a local level. If we're going to provide these services by cutting services to our veterans, then that doesn't work for me either. If we cut federal funding to state homes, I'm going to have 100 veterans out in the street that have no other place to go, because all we have right now in Southern Nevada is a state home for veterans, and there's a waiting list. I can't have my veterans paying double for their prescription medication. They can barely afford the amount of money we charge them, because many of them have multiple needs, multiple ailments, and if they're paying for 6 or 7 prescriptions a month, to double that would be the difference between getting their medication and getting their food. And it's, I don't want to be melodramatic, but that's the reality on the ground. And providing or instituting a user fee for our veterans, to me, is unconscionable given their service and the promises that we have made. So we need to do this and do this well. And I would invite you and the president to come to my district and talk to my veterans, not in a staged event where everyone needs a ticket to get in and you have to be a great advocate of the administration or a great fan of the president, so they give out the tickets in advance, but to be able to sit and talk to my rank and file veterans that use these facilities, that need these facilities, that are looking to their government for the help that we promised them. If you spoke with them for 5 minutes, you would know what their needs are, what their concerns are, what their challenges are, and then maybe we can adequately fund this VA budget. But I'm anxious to hear your responses. To me, and what I find most insulting, is that if the VA knew about these numbers in April, to have kept it from all of us for this long of a time, to me, doesn't make any sense. We're all in this together. And I think many of the members on both sides of the aisle feel that we've been had. And for the amount of work and time we put into this committee and into our jobs, to have deceptive numbers or wrong numbers, and having the VA know this and having us go forward with these wrong numbers, to me makes absolutely no sense in the world. So I'm anxious to hear your remarks, and I thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Ms. Berkley. Ms. Brown-White, recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank you for holding this hearing so that we can get some facts, so that we can remedy the situation. That's what this hearing is all about, making sure that we get accurate numbers. You know, last Thursday, the VA testified that they've used $600 million for health care that was intended for infrastructure and maintenance. We can't be in the business of borrowing money so that the buildings dilapidate, so that we don't have proper maintenance. You know, I have the highest number of veterans of any member of Congress. I have over 107,000 veterans. I, like other members in VISN 8, also have the highest number of returning service men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. We want to make sure that the quality of care is there. You know, had we had this information, we could have addressed the problem over a month ago when we passed the Military Quality of Life and Veterans Affairs Appropriations Bill, if we had that information. 2 years ago, I served on the Budget Committee and was able to work with the chairman to plus up the amount for veterans, specifically that it would, with the agreement that it would go to veterans' health care. I don't think there's a member of this committee who doesn't want to do well by veterans. But if we are given faulty information or if we are misled, then we can't do our job. I don't want one veteran, whether they served in World War II, I even have some World War I veterans in my district. Over 50% of the 107,000 veterans that I have use the veterans' health care system. I don't want one veteran deserving health care, whether it's World War I all the way up to Operation Iraqi Freedom. I don't want them to be denied that because we were misled. It wasn't intentional. I'm sure of that, Mr. Secretary. You know, when you use a model and you just come into a new job, which you did, you know, sometimes you rely on the same-o. We can't do that. We cannot have that ever happen again. You know, there are certainly other programs that we can perhaps pare down to make sure that the men and women who serve our country are well cared for. That's our job. But we can't do it if the information that we have is in some way, shape, or form not accurate. We want to help you, Mr. Secretary. We want to help you to make sure that the VA healthcare system in our country is one that everybody can be proud of. It takes dollars to do that, and it takes a commitment. And I know that the members of this committee have that commitment. And I assure you that I look forward to working with you to make sure that that veterans' healthcare is the very, very best in the world. And I appreciate your being here today and look forward to your testimony. I do have a formal opening statement, which I'll submit.
Your written statement will be entered in the record without objection. Mr. Udall, recognized for an opening statement.
And I would also ask that my full opening statement be put in the record.
Your written statement will be entered into the record without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this crucial hearing today, and thank you, Mr. Secretary, for joining us. I'm holding here in my hand a stack of letters sent to the President, the Speaker, the House Appropriations Committee over the past year. These letters have been signed by many members of this committee. On October 11, 2004, a letter to the President requesting he reevaluate his fiscal year 05 budget request in light of the large number of veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan who were in need of health care. February 17, 2005, letters to the President and the Appropriations Committee requesting that they add an additional $1.3 billion to the FY05 Supplemental Appropriations Bill to provide health care and readjustment assistance for Afghanistan and Iraq veterans. March 7, 2005, a letter to Speaker Hastert about the woefully insufficient funding for the VA under President's FY06 budget proposal and asking the House increase the amount by $3 billion for veterans' health care. April 27, 2005, a letter to Secretary Nicholson about how the budget cuts for veterans' health care have hurt New Mexico. The accommodations hotel lodging program in Albuquerque, New Mexico has been forced to limit access to veterans patients further than 150 miles, which has adversely affected thousands of veterans. The average wait for dental appointments at the dental facility in Albuquerque is 2 years. All of these letters were ignored. If what I have read in the papers is accurate, it is about time the Secretary and the Administration fully acknowledge what is going on here. I hope today the House will pass an emergency supplemental appropriations bill for veterans' health care. We are here today to figure out what events and mistakes leading up to today made this necessary and what the VA and this committee are going to do to prevent a recurrence in the future. I'm particularly concerned that the committee was not informed of the VA's agreement that there was a shortfall earlier. I want answers about the timeline here and about when exactly the VA began reprogramming the money for this purpose without the knowledge of Congress. And if the main problem here is that the VA underestimated how many soldiers returning from Iraq it would need to care for, what does this say about our planning for that war? I very much look forward to hearing Secretary Nicholson's answers to these questions today. There are 183,000 veterans in my state who deserve nothing less. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for your statement. Mr. Turner, you're recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you holding this hearing and our ability to get additional information. And this, Mr. Secretary, I appreciate your being here and your service. You certainly have an excellent reputation that I know as we proceed in this is going to serve you well as we try to resolve it and come to solutions and conclusions. I got on this committee because in my community, my large veterans facility was exhibiting pressures for reductions of services that did not make sense. As we heard that the Department of Veteran Affairs had the funding necessary, we still were hearing of reductions in services. So I sought a seat on this committee because I wanted to find out why this was occurring and what needed to happen. I think the comments earlier that suggest that budgetary processes may be compared to guessing are unfortunate because we all know that in the issue of budgetary processes, we're talking about issues of professionalism. I appreciate Mr. Strickland's comments that this is not a partisan issue, and I certainly think that to the extent that this is made partisan, we're not serving our veterans because, again, this is not a partisan issue. It is a professional issue. The professional issue is how do you prepare budgets and how do you seek funds from Congress that provide the Department of Veteran Affairs what you need? When we say it's not partisan, I think we can say that there is not one member of this committee and there is not one member of Congress that would not vote to give the Department of Veteran Affairs what they need. So the question becomes then, how do we arrive at what does the Department of Veteran Affairs need, and then the process for us providing that to you? And I know that today you're going to be speaking as to how you're working on that process to fix it, to make certain that we can do our job and lived up to our commitments of making certain you have what you need to be able to serve our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
I apologize for not making this request earlier, but I'd like to submit a written copy of my opening statement for the record.
Without objections, to be entered. Thank you. Ms. Brown, you're recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for holding the meeting today. And I, for once, can say that I want to be associated with the remarks of all of the members that I've heard comments about the Veterans Department and the Secretary. And to be truthful, if we was in court, they would have to view me as a hostile witness because I feel pissed off. My favorite secretary was Jesse Brown, and his motto was putting veterans first. Now, this town is an ugly rumor town, and one of the rumors going around is that the priorities of the Veterans Affairs is to make sure your picture is up. I know that's a lie. I know it's not true. But that's what the rumor has been going on, and that's why we haven't been focusing on the health care of veterans. But let me just say that every member on this committee knows that we're close to $3 billion short for the needs of the veterans. And I don't understand how anyone could feel like, oh, $1 billion. We have known for a long time that the numbers that we was getting, the comments that we were getting from the community was just all lies. We need to have OMB to come in here. Because I know the former secretary, when they turned in the numbers, it was different. And when it got to OMB, they approved whatever they wanted to, and that's what was sent up to the Hill. So the real people that need to be in here is OMB. We need to get them on the carpet. But, Mr. Chairman, after this meeting, I am hoping that you and the ranking member would put forth a motion that this committee will come out here today and the news will be that we authorize an additional $1 billion for Veterans Affairs, for former maintenance, and for health care. That should be the headlines in the news, not whatever the secretary has to say. So I want to go on record that I am not happy, I'm not pleased, my veterans are not. And the sad thing is they support you and the Republicans. They voted for you. And they don't understand why you don't support them the same. The first president of the United States said that no matter how great the war, and I question that, that the men and women would determine whether they're going to join the military as to how we treat the veterans. And they're getting shabby treatment from this Bush administration and your administration, sir. I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank the gentlelady. Mr. Bilirakis, recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for this hearing. I, as others have said, agree with most of what all of our members, the comments that they've made. I agree with Ms. Hooley particularly, even though she's left. I agree with Mr. Reyes in terms of the veteran suffering as a result of what has taken place here. I do sort of disagree with him, though, when he says that the system doesn't suffer. I think the system does suffer. You know, we serve on this committee, I like to think, for the most part, because we really believe in our hearts for veterans and care about veterans. But we have to depend on our staffs. We have to depend on figures that we get from OMB, from the VA administration, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have to make our decisions, because we're not magic here to pull them out of the sky. And when we have, as was already indicated, the former secretary telling us, sitting right there and telling us that he needed an additional $1 billion, and that was ignored by OMB, it was ignored by our leadership up here, it was ignored by the White House, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the system, and it's hurting, because we don't have the credibility, we don't have the believability that we need in order to do our job. We were reminded earlier that the secretary has served as the chairman of the Republican National Committee. I think it's also very important that we be reminded that he served in Vietnam with tremendous distinction, very decorated, received the Combat Infantryman's Badge, which is, frankly, in the eyes of many, even more significant than the Medal of Honor. So that is the man that we have as Secretary of Veterans Affairs, not just that he served as member, as the chairman of the Republican National Committee. We need to be reminded, except that I'm the oldest member in many respects, in all respects, I guess, of this committee, but I'm certainly the longest serving. And I can tell you that from day one, and I'm not whitewashing what's taken place. I hope you know me too well for that. But from day one, we've had the same kind of problems. I don't care who was the administration. I don't care who was in charge of OMB. Frankly, I mean, every secretary we've had, Mr. Brown, so many others, it came from the heart. But they had to answer to other people, OMB particularly, and White House, and the leaderships on both sides of the aisle, and that sort of thing. I used to sit over there and constantly remind our members at virtually every hearing, certainly in every markup, that the percentage increases in virtually every other program that we mess with up here, the increases over a period of time are something like 125%. And for veterans, it was something in the 50% category, because we are way behind the curve. I mean, the veterans are basically considered almost at the tail end. That's been the way it's been all along. I mean, we had to handle the Clinton budget. And Mr. Brown, I specifically asked him one day, who does he really work for? I mean, he's a good man. I knew him personally.
But I specifically asked him, why? Because we weren't happy with the president's budget. I mean, where was it? Where his loyalties? Where his loyalties? I didn't use those kind of words, but basically to the veterans or to the administration. But he worked for the administration, and he had to kowtow, so to speak. He probably made an awful lot of noise behind the closed doors. It's a very difficult thing, and I'll tell you, it's really a mindset. I think it's a mindset that we have. I don't think this committee has it, but virtually everybody else has it, that the cost of war does not end with the end of the war. And that's a mindset that we just don't have. And so our leadership in the majority, I mean, the battles that I've had with those people over the years. But I would say that I also had as many battles when Sonny Montgomery, who was the most beloved man who ever served probably in the House of Representatives, received all the awards, sat right there. And I used to battle him on concurrent receipt. I used to battle with him regarding not enough funding for health care for veterans, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a mindset, my friends. And we sit here, and you know, the partisanship that takes place and the demagoguery that takes place doesn't help matters any. And you might be right when it comes to the unified budget or the need for more money, but when it's done in such a way that it's demagoguery and that it's politics. Listen, there are people on this committee who refused to sign my discharge petition on concurrent receipt. They were in the House. But when it came to a Democratic discharge petition, oh, my God, these Republicans were horrible that they refused to sign it. That's politics, okay? That's politics. And if we put that aside and decide to sit around a table and work together, and, you know, the clout that we have, and hopefully that with the Secretary supporting us and we supporting him with OMB and with the administration, I think we can do a much better job. Will it ever be perfect? Of course not. This is not a perfect science, obviously.
Would the speaker yield first?
Well, my time is up. I just basically would finish. Maybe the chairman can.
Yeah, but I feel very strongly that I need to respond to what you said about Secretary Jesse Brown.
I didn't say anything bad about Secretary.
And I just want to be clear that we all on the record that I understood very clearly that he had problems with the Clinton administration,
yeah.
And he would come here and he would stand up to them. That's
Amen.
The point I'm making.
Amen.
Regardless of who
Amen
the administration
that.
Was,
Amen
he
that.
Was
he
a
had,
man that would stand up to the
he
administration,
had problems,
and we
and
need
I would,
that from the veterans.
And I would suggest, right, and I would suggest, let's, and I would suggest that Secretary Principe had problems with him. I would suggest that this secretary, if he hasn't had that much of an opportunity to do so yet, because he's relatively new, he's going to have problems.
Well, we just right. don't need right. someone just happy to have the job.
I just hope that we've learned a lesson for what's taking place here, because for the first time, we've had an acknowledgement on the part of all of these people. I don't know, maybe even OMB for crying out loud. Certainly from the White House, from the administration, from our leadership and whatnot, that there is a true shortage in terms of this $1 billion and maybe more for the first time. So hopefully we've all learned a lesson and we'll work together. Thanks.
All right.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
May I request that my prepared remarks be submitted for the record?
Yes. Berkeley, a written statement without objection shall be added into the record. So ordered. I also, my colleagues, I have a request from Mr. Tom Osmer of Nebraska, not a member of the committee, that a statement be submitted as part of the record for this hearing. Asking unanimous consent without objection shall be ordered. His statement shall be entered into the record.
Ms. I would Hooley? Also ask for my record, my statement to be entered into the record.
All members may submit a written statement, and it will be entered into the record. Hearing no objection, we'll give you 3 days. To enter that statement into the record. You mumbled, wasn't it? Mr. Secretary, I want to thank you for coming. At about 9:45, I was on the phone and had a painful discussion, no differently than other members that are in this room, no differently than what you have had to do. And it was to speak to a father whose son was on the helicopter that was shot down in Afghanistan. And those of us that experienced that conversation with a loved one, it's not easy. They are looking for reassurances. He just wants to know what happened. When can I get my son back? He wants to fulfill his son's last request. And it's, Dad, if I don't come home, bury me in Arlington. So members here can rightfully be upset, no differently than you in taking the helm of this position that you have. I sincerely believe that interwoven into the fabric of our common bond of all of us as Americans is our love, our respect, our admiration, and our care for the men and women who wear the uniform and the loved ones they leave behind. You're a West Point grad, grew up on a farm, 7 children, combat veteran, retired colonel, knighted by the Pope for raising human dignity in the world. The statement that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, I know your heart. Now we want to hear your statement about your intellect and how you're going to solve the problem. Mr. Secretary, you're recognized.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and to discuss budget forecasting and the finances of the Veterans Health Administration. Accompanying me this morning is our Undersecretary for Health, Dr. John Perlin, and our General Counsel and Chief Management Officer, Mr. Tim McLean. Mr. Chairman, we appreciate the support of both the Congress and the Administration to identify the resources necessary to restore capital funds and enhance VA's ability to deliver care to our veterans in 2005. By way of summarizing this week's hearings, I think it's important to review how VA's health care resource needs are projected. Before eligibility reform, VHA budgets were based on historical expenditures, adjusted for inflation, and then increased based on proposed new initiatives. As the VHA became an integrated health system, VA adopted the tools of the private sector and moved to using actuarial modeling to dynamically formulate a health care budget. Actuarial modeling allows VA to project resource needs based on veteran population trends, based on changing health care technologies and utilization patterns, and the cost of goods and services. Actuarial modeling is a well-tested private sector tool that the VA applies to our 21st century healthcare system. Over the past 6 years, we have integrated the VHA enrollee healthcare demand model projections into our healthcare financial and management processes. In March 2005, March of this year, the demand and resource trend line moved upward. My letter of April 5, 2005, to the chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on Military Construction and Veterans Affairs said, quote, "Whenever trends indicate the need for refocusing priorities, VA's leaders ensure prudent use of reserve funding for these purposes. This is just simply part of good management," end of quote. On April 19th, VA staff met with the ranking member and members of the minority and majority staff of the House Appropriations Subcommittee to discuss the Veterans Equitable Resource Allocation, or VERA, model. During this meeting, there were protracted discussions of the health system's financial status for 2005, including the reallocation of capital funds for direct patient care. During that same week, I met with the director of OMB to update him on the current status and to alert him to potential issues for fiscal year 2006 as well. The model on which the 2005 budget was formulated relied on data from the year 2002. Before the beginning of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and as we all know, the world has changed and much has occurred since then. During fiscal year 2005 budget Our 2005 budget assumed that 23,553 VA patients would be veterans of our global war on terror. That number is now estimated to be 103,000. Fortunately, many of those are just seeking routine health care services and dentistry. However, it's important to point out, I think, also that the majority of the new VA health care users in 2005 are older veterans from previous eras, and we are caring well for all of them under this budget as well. In May, we performed an actuarial model update for fiscal year 2006 with more current and accurate data from 2004. Further indicating to us the significant increase in patient demand that we could expect for fiscal year 06. In the first week of June, the VA staff met with VA and DOD branch staff at OMB for a mid-year management review and to discuss the implications of the FY05 management decisions on the 06 budget. Similarly, VA staff met on June 3rd with majority staff members of the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees to discuss the implications of the reallocation and use of funds projected for carryover into the base for fiscal year 06. On June 23rd, the Undersecretary for Health offered testimony to this committee on the actuarial model and its limitations, and identified a 2005 workload growth rate of 5.2% compared with a forecasted growth rate of 2.3%. That is a delta or difference of 126%. We have been forthcoming with information regarding both the status of our budget and the responsible management decisions that we have made as 2005 has unfolded. However, I think the difficulties of projecting health care utilization in the out years are now self-evident to everyone. While the VHA enrollee health care demand model is a valuable budgeting and planning tool for projecting VA's resource requirements, projecting health care trends and utilization for a huge health care system such as the VA, it is inherently complex. It is significantly more challenging in the context of the federal budgeting timeline, the phasing that's needed, which requires projections not for the next year or even the next open season, as in the private sector, but for 2.5 or 3.5 years hence. As I explained in testimony on Tuesday before the House Appropriations Committee and the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, we do have a plan to manage within existing resources without putting at risk our ability to provide high-quality care for our nation's veterans, which is our mission and our goal. However, based on my consultations over the past few days, it is clear that many members of Congress and veterans groups continue to have concerns. Because it is important to this administration that our veterans have full confidence that the VA will have the resources it needs to meet our obligations, we now believe that it is appropriate to request additional resources for fiscal year 2005. Thus, later this afternoon, the administration will be submitting an FY 2005 supplemental request in the amount of $975 million. For VA medical care to address the higher than estimated number of patients seeking health care services. The administration is also currently reviewing how this supplemental request impacts fiscal year 06 needs and will be proposing an FY 06 budget amendment in the very near future. With both of these actions, the administration will ensure that veterans continue to receive the highest quality care at VA facilities. Mr. Chairman, again, we appreciate this opportunity for continuing dialogue to assure resources for direct patient care in 2005 and to address the additional resources necessary to restore capital and reserve funds in support of timely, high-quality care for veterans. We also appreciate the opportunity to discuss our budget modeling and projections with you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I want to thank you for your supplemental request. The $975 million, if you would please give me a breakout. If you would also then tell me, as we go into the last quarter, what monies of that do you think that will be carried over into 06? I'm asking you to project. If you could do that for me right now.
Yes, sir. I'll give you these categorically the way that we are slotting them, and then be happy to submit this in written detail. But for the increase in OEF workload and expense, in forecasting that impact upon the rest of this fiscal year, and the 103,000 veterans, including the Guard and Reserve soldiers that we're treating and will be, we're projecting $273 million. For increases in CHAMP VA, which is the health care benefit for dependents of 100% service-connected veterans, we're projecting $39 million. For VA long-term care, which is the nursing home and the daily average consensus is what we use to measure that, we're projecting $226 million. For a fee basis care to reduce the waiting lists, this is where in a facility, if the waiting list is getting unacceptably long, we are authorized to contract out and have people go out on the local economy to see doctors and medical facilities. And for that, for the rest of this year, we're projecting $58 million. Increase in energy costs. Again, when this budget was put together using 2002 baseline data and looked at again in with actuals of 2003, we did not anticipate the amount of increase in fuel and utility costs that would be experienced by the country and, of course, by the VA. And so that amount is $95 million. And we are experiencing a greater than expected workload in our priorities 1 through 6, veterans, service-connected disability veterans, and thus asking for $200 million for that category. And for an increased utilization of services for veterans overall, including the need for the purchase of more emergency medical equipment and supplies, $84 million, Mr. Chairman. And that is $975 million.
All right. Mr. Chairman, you have made an official supplemental request to the United States Congress in the amount of $975 million. I'd like for Mr. Brown, if you could come forward and take the chair. I don't have much time. I chair this entire full committee, and I have some work to do. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and I'll entertain questions from the membership. Mr. Evans, do you have a question?
Mr. Secretary, your predecessor, Secretary Principi, told this committee how much more he had requested for a budget than what had actually been provided to him. What was the difference between what the VA requested and what they obtained from OMB, like our fiscal year 2006 budget?
Does your question relate to the numbers that I just stated?
No, this is different.
Mr. Chairman.
I think he's talking about the 206, Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, let counsel restate the question.
Secretary Nicholson, the question is, your predecessor, Secretary Principi, forthrightly told this committee how much more he had requested for his budget than what he had actually been provided. What was the difference between what the VA requested and what they obtained from OMB for your FY 2006 budget request?
I don't know exactly that number, Mr. Evans, because when I got into this process in February, that number was established, and I was not part of the discussions leading up to that. And I've not known that number.
How many clinics have you closed, understaffed, or delayed the opening of in this process?
I'm going to ask Dr. Perlin to answer that question. I think the answer is that we have not closed any clinics. Except I think we may have consolidated two clinics in one area, but I'm going to ask Dr. Perlin to answer that.
Sir, I'd have to get back to you on the record for any clinic shifts, but I think the important point is that we've gone from 200 to 874 community-based outpatient clinics, and we have been continuing to open clinics.
How are you going to address the situation faced by veterans in Vision 16, where, as of the end of April, no appointments will be scheduled for new non-service-connected veterans? And how can you say that this is not directly related to the $1 billion shortfall you currently face?
I'll ask Dr. Perlin to respond, sir.
Sir, I believe your question was about Vision 16 and a clinic or a hospital.
If I can make, it's the medical centers that are in Vision 16. They have a letter that was entered into the record by the American Legion in last week's hearing detailing that all medical centers in that Vision are not accepting new appointments for non-service-connected veterans, dated April 29th this year.
I had heard of a particular hospital in Vision 16 that had inappropriately offered a letter that delayed new patients to the clinic or to the facility.
Dr. Perlin, that letter says it applies to all Vision 16, not just the Alexandria Medical Center.
I will have to look into this. I'm not aware of a letter that has been sent to patients along those lines.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bilorkas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, when did we hold the hearing when they had the actuary here? It was last week, I believe. Yeah. Not 23rd. Now, the data that was used for 2005 projections was 2002 data. I mean, come on. Is that the best that we can do? And the actuary is sitting at the end there, and when I kind of raised this question to her, I sort of understood her to say that, well, we use the most current data, the most current data. Does that mean that 2002 is the most current data? I mean, since 2002, as you have already said, we hadn't invaded Iraq yet. We didn't have those situations present. We have supplementals up here. Many people don't like supplementals, but basically it's so to speak a correction on shortfalls in appropriations that took place previously.
And so, you know, it's an admitted on our part. Doesn't the VA take into consideration these types of changes and change their data and that sort of thing?
That's a very important question, and frankly, I think that, you know, may lead to what could be one of the most hopeful and helpful parts of having a hearing like this would be for the VA to be able to come up with a better, more accurate system to project its needs, its business. It's even, in some ways, more difficult than that, because the model that is used does not take into account long-term care. It doesn't take into account dentistry, and it doesn't take into account prosthetics.
Does it take into account older veterans who are with related service connected conditions? You mentioned
yes,
older veterans.
It is a pretty sophisticated model. It has 55 variables of services that it encompasses. And as our testimony has been, and as you all know that have been on this committee for a while, it has worked quite well and been pretty accurate up until recent times. But as you also know, that when 2002 was the predicate for 2005, the global war on terrorism had begun, but it had not begun even in Iraq. Saying this to sense the difficulty, because right now we're working on 07,
and we're
07, we're dealing with 04 data.
04 data.
Yes, sir.
Well, come on, you're a West Point graduate. Is that right? I mean, can't we do better than that? We have computers today.
I
don't know what's going to, and we're also leading, this is related to using DOD data. As I understand it, that the data is not very user-friendly because it's very dated. It's not aggregated by unit or particularly by geographical location. So how in the world can we forecast when these young men and women come back here from, you know, from Iraq and Afghanistan if we're using very dated data as far as the VA is DOD and VA is concerned? You know, we talk about models and we talk about numbers and powerballs and things of that nature. To me, I know it's a big system. I know this is big government and it's a big system and it's a big health system and things of that nature. But we have computers, for crying out loud. We can do better than that. Can't we do better than that? I mean, are you satisfied that you're going to be using three-year-old data for 07 and three-year-old data for 08? All right. Are you going to look into making changes?
I'm not at all satisfied. I'm uneasy about having now to work on our submittal for the 07 budget that will eventually come to you. And then, you know, sitting there in 07 and seeing what the world, you know, is going to be like and what the demand is going to be like and what the return sure. element for
but
people coming
we,
from
combat. Can't we plug in more current data? That's the whole question.
One of the things I think I'm learning from this, Mr. Bildakis, is that, I mean, we do monitor actuals on a monthly basis. We have a monthly performance review. What the VA needs to do, I believe, is to come here to you on a far more frequent and scheduled basis. So that you know what we know when we know it. I mean, we through the first 6 months of this fiscal year that we're in 05, we were on that plan that was projected based on that 02 data. We were on it and we were operating pretty close. Then it began to deviate up. And that's when but overall, if you take a look at this is a $30 billion business. Projected its needs based on the data of 3 years ago, and it came within 3% with a war having broken out in between times. So in many contexts, that would not be that'd be pretty good. We took that data and made a decision with the reserves that we had on hand and to reallocate resources to get through the end of the fiscal year, and we divulged that in many different ways, as my testimony has been. Now, you can disagree with that judgment, and obviously you do. Most of you do, and we accept that, and that's why you're now seeing this request for supplemental in lieu of that.
My time is up. Do you disagree with that judgment?
No, sir. I'm in total concurrence.
Well, All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bilirakis. And I now recognize the gentleman from California, Mr. Bilirakis. Mr. Filner.
They usually mistake us.
I'm on the wrong side aisle, you know, just. But excuse me, Mr. Filner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was somewhat struck by some of my colleagues on the other side. Said things, Ms. Brown-Waite, he said, if we had this information or we weren't misled. We had this information. We all had this information. Mr. Turner said everybody, there's not one member who would vote against giving the veterans what they needed. I had a motion on the floor to put in exactly what is missing, and you voted against it. In fact, every member on your side voted against it. So let's have some reality in this thing. You had a budget that the president gave you. It was inadequate, but you went with it. And now we've been found out. You've been found out. Mr. Secretary, in some respects, this is a phony hearing. And it's the way we're looking at modeling and these words, trend lines, projections, 55 variables, it's like you're wrong because, you know, the model ate your homework. Reminds me of students of mine used to come to school. Sorry, I didn't do it. It's not my fault. And talking about all this modeling, it's the model's fault. Allows you and this president and this this Congress to avoid responsibility and accountability for what you've done. We're talking about people here. We're talking about veterans who have served this nation. And you're talking about trend lines and projections, and you're uneasy. You should be outraged. You should be out in every damn hospital in this country to say, I'm sorry, we made a mistake, and we're not serving you right, and we're going to correct it. But you come here and say, I'm uneasy. Oh, the model is wrong. It didn't have the fact that we went to war in Iraq. Hello? Everybody knows we went to war in Iraq. The model is not the problem. You are the problem. The president's the problem. And we're not serving our veterans. That's what's going on. We know. Look, you guys said this worked well. This has worked for 20 years, and you're still not using it. When we had a hearing last week where people were asked, the guys who made up this budget, to come and tell us how they did it, not one member on your side was there before that hearing. Not one. And you say we didn't have the information. We've had the information. I've used this as my Bible for 12 years, and this has been right on every single time. You ought to look at it. I hope you look at it. Because this has been right, and you ought to use this instead of the your model, which you outlined just about 2 minutes ago, Mr. Secretary, is how it didn't have long-term care, it didn't have this, didn't have that, didn't have that. Why are you using it? This is stupid. This is stupid. This is not real. You guys are talking about models. We're talking about people who aren't getting served. There's 1,000 people in my district on a waiting list. They can't get dental care for 2 years. On and on and on. We have lists and lists of the problems, and you have to look up further because you don't know about that clinic or this. The system is in a crisis, and you ought to be emotional about it. And you sit here and you talk about that you're uneasy. I asked you when you first came to this committee, what was the figure that you submitted, that your department submitted to the OMB? By the way, that's the real problem, as we've heard before. This administration, this OMB, is trying to balance the budget on the backs of the veterans. They don't care what your models are. They're giving you a figure based on what they want to do with other departments. They don't give a damn about your model. Why should we? We should be talking about the veterans. They're trying, and this administration wants to balance the budget on the backs of the veterans. But I asked you, what did your department submit versus what OMB gave you? And you said to me, and I just broke out laughing, I don't know. There was 10 people on the side. You could ask any one of them. They all knew. 4 months later, you're back here. You gave the same exact answer. I don't know. With all this problem, wouldn't you want to know? Wouldn't you want to go back and ask? You're sitting there, and you're telling us you don't know. I have seen a lot of irresponsibility and a lot of refusal to accept responsibility and a lack of accountability and a lack of passion since I came to Congress. But you beat the cake. I mean, you set the standard. I have never seen someone as laid back with a $3 billion problem with our veterans not getting appointments as you are today. Again, I think you should resign. What do you think? Do you think you ought to resign?
No, sir.
Tell me what you're. Why should you stay in office? What are you doing about what's going on? You read us a list of things of you're going to put $26 million here and $32 million here. I want you to go to the veterans and say, I am going to change things and make sure you get the treatment you need. Have you been out of Washington to see one veteran since this came about? Come on.
Mr. Fielder, I was in your state this weekend meeting with homeless veterans.
And did you tell them you were going to give them more support?
Homeless veterans advocates. I was at the West L.A.
And what did you tell them?
Talking to veterans and talking to...
What did you tell them? Did you tell them the motto was wrong?
No,
I'm sorry, I can't serve you. The motto was wrong?
Mr. Chairman, the Secretary should be permitted to answer the questions.
In regular order, Mr. Chairman, if this time is...
Mr. Fielder's time has expired, but Mr. Secretary, if you would care to continue to respond of the visit you had to California, be certainly in order.
I visit hospitals all over the country, and as I said, I was in California this past weekend visiting facilities there and meeting with homeless veterans, homeless advocates, because we have, as you know, considerable homeless veterans problem in L.A. also, which concerns me a great deal.
So did you raise the money for that? I mean, did you increase the money in the budget for homeless?
Regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Phil, I'm sorry, your time has expired. I've just allowed a gentleman a chance to respond to your question, and no further questions from you, please.
Actually, yes. What I'm trying to do is to put the pieces together between us, the VA, the public sector, and the private sector, as we've done in Chicago for 231-bed homeless veteran facility using VA loan guarantees, HUD Section 8 rental assistance allowances, and Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Chicago came in. We're trying to replicate that in other areas, including in California, where the need is probably the worst. And I met with elected officials in Santa Monica to discuss that as well. But at the hospital, I took an extensive tour. I talked to patients, as I do everywhere I go, to see, and some of them, knowing that I'm in the building, make their way to me to tell me how grateful they are and what good care they believe that they are getting from the VA. Certainly, there may be exceptions here and there, but I am proud and will stand behind the excellent delivery of health care services that the VA is providing to our veterans at the 157 hospitals and the over 850 clinics that we have throughout this country. Does that mean that we don't need more resources? Heck no. We've just established that. And are working toward that with your help. But I'd like also, if I could, to ask you a question, Mr. Fielder, if you can tell me what the VA is going to need in 2007, based on what the actual situation is going to be in 2007, or if anybody else can, we sincerely will appreciate that input, because that is what we're doing right now is in addition to this work, is we're formulating the 07 budget.
You know, your own department has testified that the health care costs increase inflation 13 or 14% per year. You told us that. So I'd start right there, 13, 14% increase. We know how many more people are coming back from Iraq. You step it up from there. And then I'd sit down with the guys who made the budget, because they're right every time, and get the number from them, and they'll provide you with the expertise that you need.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Ms. Secretary, when did you assume responsibility for this job?
February 1st, Mr. Chairman.
Of what year?
Of 2005.
So you really inherited this budget?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. I recognize the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Stern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me just say, in some of the questions posed by Mr. Filner about the independent budget he raised and had in his hand, I've had the opportunity to serve in the minority. And when Sonny Montgomery was chairman, and I never recollect the Democrats or the chairman, Sonny Montgomery, ever using the independent budget as a guide. So this committee really makes its decisions on the best information, and you're the one to help us provide that. Now, in your opening statement, you did admit that some VA services are not modeled by Milliman, and you mentioned their readjustment counseling, dental services, the foreign medical program, CHAMP VA, and others. And I guess the question I have, do you propose to have those modeled based upon this? Because yesterday, the staff briefing, my staff told me that the average cost of a dental exam for a returning reservist is $3,100. Now, this seems high, and I guess maybe two questions are, dealing with the reservist and his dental bill of $3,100, what are the factors and how can we plan better to handle that? And then the question is whether you're going to model on other areas that you mentioned in your opening statement.
Again, those are very good questions, and we are we're dealing with that. The dentistry for the returnees is a new element, and I have confirmed that number because that number seemed high to me as well on a per capita basis. But it's not, of course, just examinations. It's for dental work. And many of them are in need because of deferred care and so forth, that of great amount of work on their dentistry, and we're providing that to them. So that is an accurate number, that $3,100 per dental patient. One of the things that we do in trying to project is to do what they used to do in total, as I testified, is to go back, see what the actuals were, to try to develop the trends, and then apply an increased cost factor to that growth projection, and that's essentially what we do with those things that are not modeled. We're searching the market to see if there are any other modelers out there in these kinds of service areas that we provide, and we've not yet found any.
All right. Maybe one other concern I have is why are quarterly reviews not conducted?
Why are they not? I will ask Dr. Perlin to give you a detailed answer on that, but we internally sir, we do monthly reviews, and what I've said earlier in reflecting on our experiences here is that I think that we, the VA, need to come here to at least leadership, or wherever leadership delegates, to have more frequent scheduled communication on exactly what is happening, with our patient trend line and our costs, so that you all know exactly what we know when we know it. Do you have anything to add to that, Doc?
Let me just add, as I understand it, a mid-year budget review has really showed you the difficulty here. And so the question is, why don't you just move to quarterly reviews so that you detect this in a quarter rather than a mid-year? And that's really what I'm trying to get at.
Thank you, Mr. Stearns, for that question. In fact, we do track, as the Secretary indicated, absolutely monthly. The mid-year review presented an opportunity to come to some summary interpretation, and it was simply coincidental with the escalation use of what would have been capital funds and the need to address the difference in utilization, the number of patients, compared to what had been projected. So, in fact, the timing was coincidental, but those data were apparent during the monthly review. The mid-year simply summarized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would the gentleman yield for a moment, since he has
glad
a
few
seconds? Dr. Perlin, do you review the I keep referring to it as unified budget, the independent budget submitted by the veterans?
Yes, sir, I do.
You do?
The independent budget.
Do you find fault with a lot of their projections and whatnot?
I think the independent budget, there was testimony last week on that, uses a different approach. It builds on a historical base.
Yeah,
it makes and,
that's
policy
and that's bad?
That's not necessarily bad. We don't believe it's as accurate. The ability to project different needs of service and the needs or the services that would be required given different policies, you know, or what the actuarial approach applies. When we used to do historical-based budgeting, it's my understanding, and this is before my time, that the error was 11.2% the last time that was applied.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Perlin, we certainly would welcome the quarterly review if you would. We could meet with the committee and come in and let's take a look at those figures. And I now recognize the gentlelady from Florida, Ms. Brown.
Thank you. First of all, let me just say I've been on this committee since 1992, and the Republicans, Mr. Stern, have been in charge of this committee for over 10 years.
Will the
gentleman? And so at some point, you're going to take some responsibility for what goes on in this committee. Now, 81% of the American people said that the Congress is not in tune with what they think is important. Now, clearly, they know that veterans taking care of is important. Now, you have just given us this list of your requests. The Senate passed $1.5 billion. I'm looking at this trying to find out where's the maintenance, the problems with the, where's the maintenance portion. Now, if we had adopted, if you had requested 1.5, the Senate did 1.5, we wouldn't have a conference. We could pass a bill before we left here tonight on the way to the president, and it's a win-win for everybody, everybody meaning the veterans. Why is it that we're going to have to go to conference when the Senate passed last night $1.5 billion, and you know that's what's needed? Why you didn't come up here with the same request? No conference. We pick up the Senate. When he sent it over, we pick it up. We pass it. It's on the way to the president's desk. Then he's taking pictures, taking credit. But the main thing is the veterans will be getting the services they need right up front. And let me tell you something. Clearly, money is not an issue because there's plenty of money up here. The problem is priority, whether or not the veterans are the priority or whether the tax cut is the priority. Certainly, we spend $1 billion a week in Iraq, $4 billion a month. But those soldiers today are veterans tomorrow. And we need to have the will to say that once they come home, we're going to take care of them. Now, explain to me why we didn't ask for $1.5 billion.
That for us, veterans are clearly the priority. That's why we're here. That's why I went to Iraq to meet with our forces there, and went to Landstuhl, Germany, to visit not only the people providing that transitional medical care to them, but to the patients there and our veterans there. And that's why I go regularly to Walter Reed and Bethesda and Fran O'Brien's on Friday nights to visit with them, because they are coming into our system. They are me. They're veterans. Nobody cares more about veterans.
Let me just say, everybody on this committee cares about veterans. Let me tell you, I had a veteran to come into my office that have been from Iraq for over 12 months and have not gotten the proper service. He came to me with tears in his eyes, with his little beret, and wanted me to have it to know that he was in distress. So we all have these stories. And it's not what we say. We all say the right thing. It's how we vote. It's how we spend our money. That's the bottom line. It's not what we say. We talk a great talk. But we need to walk the walk. So I want to know, why is it, and I want to answer on this, that we did not, because this is bull. This is going to take weeks. Conference, send up a time, appointing the conferees. We could finish this tonight and have it on the president's desk tomorrow. 1.5. Then it's no conference. The president get the credit. But the veterans, they are the ones that will get the service right away. And we, as members of Congress, will do our jobs. And the American people will be able to separate some of us and feel like, well, they do have some of our priorities. But as we speak today, 81% of them think we're not doing their, we don't have their priorities. What we do up here is not what they want. But they want us to take care of the veterans. And we can do this just like that. If we had the will and cut out the bull. Mr. Secretary, please answer my question.
Madam Congresswoman, what we've requested here, and will come up in the supplemental request from OMB today, is what we need immediately to restore those items that we have already testified about that we were making diversions of because of our needs because of the increased growth. I don't believe that I can testify to you why the Senate did what it did.
Did you go over there and testify for the Senate and discuss the needs?
I have testified, yes, ma'am.
Okay. But they didn't take your recommendations? The other body?
We testified very similarly for this amount that we were experiencing for the rest of 05 in the Senate, yes. But I just wanted to add that the bill the Senate has that for 05 and 06.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for the other body. My understanding is just 05. It's just 05.
This is just 05, yes.
No, sir. The Senate is just 05.
I don't think so.
I think the Senate, really, when they introduced the billion and a half, Mr. Secretary, you can correct me if I'm wrong, they didn't have the exact numbers from you when they passed the bill last night, and so they said whatever is not spending this year would be carried forward to 06. Because yes, you do have an 06 problem you hadn't addressed yet, and I will address that on a separate legislation.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
But the question, and I know that the chairman of this committee is out working to probably come up with the proposal, but the point that I just made.
You made a good point.
The point is that if we have to have a conference,
I understand,
and all of that, this is going to take days.
I understand.
But we can send a message,
Mr.
to the
chairman,
American people.
Regular order.
She's got a right to answer question. Okay. But
let's don't be rude.
But you
I said it.
Let me just answer for Mike that you raise a good point, and I'm not sure what the logistics will be. I know they need immediate help, but I'm not so sure today has got to be the answer, but at least we're working on the problem.
I would appreciate that we take that into consideration. And if it's because I'm a Democrat, then let it be your amendment. It don't have to be mine.
Chairman,
my name
regular
don't have
order.
To be on it, okay. Mr. Miller.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Miller, I recognize you.
I thank the chairman for recognizing me, and I did have some questions for the secretary, but I would like to address the prior speaker. Since you've been here since 1992, you should understand how regular order works. You should also understand that when we pass an interior appropriations bill in May and the Senate puts it on their interior appropriation bill, we have to conference. And that's the way it works. They attached it to their interior.
One darn thing, sir. I don't have to understand anything. And let me tell you something. We're not talking about interior appropriation. We're talking about VA emergency.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm regular order.
You mixed up with somebody else.
Ms. Brown, I'm sorry.
We just
Mr. Miller, if you proceed with your questions to the secretary.
Thank you. We, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Miller.
We just had a 10-minute dissertation from the gentlelady from Jacksonville on the fact that...
Jacksonville, Florida.
I'm sorry, Ms. Brown. Your time's up. Okay, Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
We just had a 10-minute dissertation from the gentlelady from Jacksonville, a member of my delegation, expressing to everybody how we could solve this problem today and that the secretary, if he had brought the appropriate number, we would not have to go to conference. The fact of the matter is, a member who has been here by her own admission since 1992 should know that we would have to go to conference anyway. And I beg to differ. The lady is absolutely incorrect. And, you know, for her to say that I'm being rude to her is an egregious statement on her part.
Excuse me,
you've allowed the Democrats to pontificate for the last 1 hour.
I was going to ask you a question, if it might, just procedural question.
As long as it doesn't come out of my time.
Okay, the billion and a half was attached to the interior appropriations, did you say?
Yes, sir.
And we'd already passed our version.
Ours was passed in May.
So you are absolutely correct.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you. The Senate last night passed theirs on an appropriations bill.
Thank you for that clarification.
You know, I just don't understand. You know, we sit here and we all are saying we are aggravated about this issue. There's not a person in here who is not. And we are listening to people just go on and on and on. People calling for people's resignation for the sole purpose of headlines. But if that's the case, let me see if I can make one. If my colleague, good friend from California, is so disturbed with what's going on, if he would offer his resignation from his congressional seat, I would be glad to write him a letter of recommendation to go to work within the budget department of the Veterans Affairs.
Would the gentleman yield?
Administrator, I will not yield. And I think that it's important that we focus on the
Chairman,
issue.
Chairman, the gentleman addressed me personally.
The issue is that we're trying to
solve. The gentleman should
learn
not to address the other members personally if he doesn't want to be interrupted.
We are trying to solve a problem here.
That's regular order, and just get back to the subject at hand. And I'm sorry.
And I will submit my questions for the record, but, you know, the actions of some of the members of the other side, I just don't understand. They're not trying to fix the problem. And I'm not directing it to anybody. If the shoe fits, wear it.
I would explain to him what we're doing.
I yield back my time.
I'd happy to explain it to you.
Ms. Film, if you might. Mr. Miller, do you have a question to the secretary?
I said I would submit him for the record.
Very good. No kidding, without opposition. Okay. Dr. Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, I was unable to be here the last time you were here. I'm one of those members that's on the Armed Services Committee, too, and it's good to see you. I appreciate you taking this job. Is it your testimony today that this actuarial model that's used, this formula, the number comes out, and that becomes the number that is submitted in the President's budget?
Yes, sir. That's the basis of the development of the number. As I said, there are a few of the variables in the services that we provide that are not modeled, so we have to do a subjective projection of those as well. But that's
when
the basis.
You've heard multiple discussions about Secretary Principi. The question to him a year ago when he was asked what number he had submitted to OMB, and he said he had submitted a number of $1.2 billion more. Is that because he looked at what came out of the model and decided it was inadequate and upped it by $1.2 billion, or is it because the model generated a budget number and OMB said, no, we're not going to go with the model, we're going to cut it by $1.2
billion? Congressman, I don't know the answer. I wasn't here, but let me see if one of my colleagues can help me. Did he use the modeling number to submit for the budget?
I believe the construction of the budget is in three pieces. The actuarial model is the first piece for those services that are modeled. As the Secretary testified, there are non-model items, including CHAMP VA, the program for beneficiaries, dentistry, prosthetics, state veteran home per diem. Each year, as you know, the department comes forward with policies as well, and that is the construct of the budget in large terms.
One of the issues that came about, Mr. Secretary, as I know you know the history, you're a very smart guy. When Secretary Principe announced here in answer to a question of Mr. Evans a year ago that he had submitted a budget request $1.2 billion more, that generated a series of events that ultimately resulted in former Chairman Smith being removed not only from his chairmanship but from the committee. I think that has sent a very strong message to the Republican caucus and about being a team player. My question for you is, have you sensed, since you've been on the job since February, that there has been any concerns expressed by any of your staff members that even though they thought that the budget numbers might not be adequate, that the model might not work because we are at war, that they had any fears that they could not step forward and express their views openly about what the true budget number should be?
Well, we've had a considerable amount of discussion about the budget, but it's been particularly focused on the 06 budget because in the 05 budget year, of course,
My question is, have you sensed any apprehension about anyone on your staff about what the ramifications might be if someone were to publicly acknowledge that the budget numbers or the model may not be adequately reflecting what's going on in the world?
Yes, sir. We've had discussions about growth and increased demand and what it means and what it will mean to our numbers and our projections, because we, as I testified, the increase in this year that we're in is over 126% from what was forecasted, and it's about 40% of that total number of patients, which is about 250,000. About 40% of those are returnees from the combat theater.
No, I understand that.
But thus, almost two-thirds of them are not. And I think the reason this is happening, and this is part of what we sit there and discuss and try to understand, is why is this happening? Because it's a delta that's taken off, and I think it's because of the quality of the care that veterans are getting in those facilities, and that word is continuing to go out there.
Mr. Secretary, when you testified here February 16th, 05, Ms. Berkley, Shelley Berkley from Nevada, made the following statement, and she did not present this to you as a question, but she made a statement, and then the chairman moved on. She said, quote, "The president's budget provides $762 million less than CBO says is needed to maintain current services for veterans health care." She went on to say, and I hope you will take a good look at the proposed budget.
Mr. Chairman, I thought we were not allowed to. There's a sign on the door that says we should not be using cell phones. I would think that the respect for the rest of this committee and certainly the secretary would encourage Mr. Filner to at least get off the phone. Apologize.
That's a good poor thing.
Mr. Filner, I do believe the sign is for the entire room, not just crouching behind someone else's chair. The sign says that it's disruptive of the committee. And Cyril, clearly you don't consider that you need to comply with the rules of the room.
Mr. Filner.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe that.
Mr. Filner, I'll have to ask you to take the telephone off or leave the room. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're doing well today, Mr. Chairman. You got a tough job for a stand-in. We're with you.
Well, I thank you for your testimony. It looked like your time has expired. You concluded your question.
No, I had not, and I would ask your indulgence if I might here.
How much time do you need?
I not give an opening statement, hoping we might be able to go around more than once. Obviously, that was misguided. I wanted to continue with Ms. Berkley's quote from February 16th, and she says, quote, "And I hope you will take a good look at the proposed budget and help the president see that some of these cuts do a tremendous disservice to our veterans and do damage." Now, that's the end of Ms. Berkley's quote. So she did not have a model in her office, but she did do her homework, and something told her, I think it was a CBO request, that this budget wasn't going to work. My question is, on hearing that testimony, and she did not ask for a response from you that day, what did you and your staff do in response to her comment that the budget was not going to be work out, it's going to be close to $800 million short, which is very close to this number that you submitted today? How did you respond to her comment?
Well, we took that on board as we do virtually everything that we hear. We recognize and appreciate the oversight responsibility, and we know that you all are sincere and you're concerned about veterans and just as we are. And so we've discussed that. One of the things that we specifically discussed about Congresswoman Berkley's discussion and so forth was in our construction accounts, because we know of her concern about that, and whether this was going to affect our CARES projections and where we were on all that. And we have that amount in the budget, and under our plan and adjustments we were planning to make through the end of the year, it was not going to affect CARES or the capital construction plans for the new VA hospital.
Ms. Berkley's specific comments during that question was that 3,000 nursing jobs would be cut throughout the country, was her concern. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I appreciate you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your indulgence.
Thank you, Dr. Snyder. Chair will recognize Mr. Boozman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to respond to my good friend, Mr. Filner, who is a good friend. I mean that sincerely. He made a comment, though, earlier that nobody was at the modeling committee, the modeling hearing that we had on this side, and I was at that hearing. In fact, I chaired the second panel, and myself and Mr. Michaud were the only ones here for the second panel. You were not here. During the second panel, the purpose of that second panel, and I think Mr. Michaud would agree with me, we had a great discussion. It was very, very good. But what we got was testimony about the difference in the VA model versus the regular model. So it was a good hearing. So, again, we shouldn't. And you can respond.
I stand corrected. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I do want to thank you, Mr. Nicholson. I know, I guess I understand, your work as a veteran, your credentials and stuff like that are impeccable, okay? I also know that you're close to the president, and I think that your very appointment really does speak highly of the president's interest in veterans. Now, one thing that I'd like to raise a question about that I am concerned about. Do we have a policy now that people that are enrolled, people that are within the system that haven't been around in a couple years, non-service connected, that hadn't been around in 2 years, are they being treated as new patients to the system in the sense of being told that they're going to have to wait 18 months?
Congressman, anyone enrolled in the system stays enrolled, and no one is disenrolled, and no one under this this plan that we had this workaround through the end of the year was going to be disenrolled or denied service from the way that we've been providing it. No, sir.
Again, I had heard that maybe there was a plan that those that had not been, you're if that were true, you'd be in a situation where you were really you know, hurting the people that weren't, you know, that you least needed to not hurt, in the sense that weren't, you know, accessing the system that much, but were counting on VA healthcare that felt like they were part of the system, hadn't been there in a while because they didn't need it. I mean, I've been blessed. I hadn't been to the doctor in 3 years probably. You know, again, I would hope that with the increased funding that we're going to do by some mechanism, however that turns out, and I think we're all committed to doing that, when we get this straight, I would hope that certainly those, you know, that are enrolled, the two-year deal, I hope that there's no hint of that at all.
Just so I want to make sure that what I stated was accurate, I'm going to ask Dr. Perlin to elaborate on it a bit.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for that question. Is that it is absolutely exactly as Secretary Nicholson said, that no one is disenrolled. No one is disenrolled from care. But if people do not come for care for five, 10 years, they do drop off of the list. So I would ask for your help in notifying veterans if they continue to want to seek services to make sure that they come by at least once every 2 years.
I would argue there's a difference in 10 years and 2 years. And I would argue that we really need to look at that. And I think 2 years is probably too short.
Okay. We can address what the duration is.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Are you through the? Okay. Mr. Michaud.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, now I have a number of questions, and I'd appreciate if you can find your response to a yes or no, or a simple one-sentence answer, because they're asked in a way that you could do that. And I apologize if I have to interrupt you, if you tend to go on, because I have several questions I'd like to ask. Mr. Secretary, we need accurate information from you to ensure that veterans get access to timely, highly quality health care. Your predecessor told us, as you heard several times today, that he had requested more money for veterans' health care than he got from OMB for his budget. Yes or no? Will you tell us the amount you have requested from OMB for veterans' health care for fiscal year 2007? Will you let the committee know what you requested? Yes or no? Pardon?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes or no, will you tell us whether you have asked OMB to resubmit the fiscal year 2006 budget to better reflect the increased demand for care?
Yes, sir. I testified in that that's coming up here soon.
Okay. Now, Mr. Secretary, I'm very concerned about reports that the VA mental health care services, including treatment for substance abuse, may not have been adequately funded to meet the needs of our veterans. Yes or no, do the current estimates for 2005 shortfall account for the total unmet mental health care needs or increased needs of Operation Iraqi Freedom or Enduring Freedom veterans? Do the current estimates account for that? Yes or no?
I can't answer that in yes or no, I don't think, Congressman. The answer is that it's a high priority. We have those needs are growing, and we have requested an additional $100 million for that in our 06 submittal.
Okay. In February, at the hearing on the budget, I alerted you then that I heard that Visions were experienced budget shortfalls, while you claimed to not have known that the Visions were already trying to cover the shortfalls. You should have been aware of our keen interest in the possibility of a budget shortfall. And despite my concerns then, I never was notified by you that the VA was exhausting at least $1 billion to cover shortfalls and have been operating with shortfalls since at least January. You have still not even answered our post-hearing questions from February, and I don't know if they're just mine or the entire committee. And it relates back to my opening statement that Belarakis mentioned, dealing with your former position as Republican National Chair. But when I read your testimony, you state in there, and I quote, the VA staff had had a very candid dialogue, end of quote, on the shortfall of its impact for next year's budget, but only with a majority staff. It makes me question whether or not you are approaching the challenges facing our veterans in a bipartisan manner. Your predecessor, unlike your predecessor who has worked with both sides of the aisle, my question for yes or no answer is, will you from now on include members and staff of both sides of the aisle, especially members from this committee, for that very candid dialogue about the budget?
Yes, sir. This is not a partisan job, and I don't even have time to think about.
I'll answer that after I have my other two questions. At the February hearing, you said your information is our information. Yes or no, will you share in a bipartisan manner with this committee the demand model for mental health and substance abuse service? Will you share that?
Yes, sir.
And I can appreciate you're saying that that you want to act in a bipartisan manner, and I agree with you, because the men and women who serve in the military, they serve for our country, not for one political party or another. And the reason why I question that is because when I read your statement, when your actions, you work with the majority party, you have not informed, like your predecessor in the past, to inform both chairs and ranking members, as long as majority and minority staff. And that's written in your testimony today. And I would encourage you to work in a bipartisan manner. I'm not looking to point fingers at you. I'm looking to make sure that we have the adequate information. And the only way we're going to be able to get that adequate information if we have access to the information in a bipartisan manner. So I appreciate that, Mr. Secretary, and look forward to working with you to solve this problem.
May I respond with one other point, Mr. Chairman, just to try to add emphasis to my statement that I don't consider this a partisan job at all. My job is about taking care of veterans. But in March, on March 24th, I sent a letter to the chairman of the Appropriations Committee on Military Quality of Life and Veterans Affairs, announcing my intention then of this transfer of money to the Medical Services Division, and I sent a copy of that letter to Congressman Edwards. And we have had significant communication from my office with Ranking Member Evans here. But it sounds like we do, because perceptions are important, need to be communicating more, we will do that. I have no difficulty with that.
I want to thank you, Mr. Secretary, and as I stated, my questions were a reflection of this committee, not the Appropriation Committee, and probably were so used to working with the former Secretary of the VA, Secretary Principe, in a bipartisan manner, and I just don't see that with you thus far. And I'm going by your statement as it relates to this committee on page 8, where you talk about meeting with staff on June 3rd, the majority staff, not the minority staff or the ranking member or chair. So I appreciate that, Mr. Secretary, and we'll look forward to working with you in a bipartisan manner to make sure that we do provide adequate health care for our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Michaud. And Mr. Secretary, if I might, we got other folks that want to ask questions too, and not to cut you off on this, but I would recommend that the same information that you share with appropriators, if you would share with the authorizers, we certainly would appreciate that. And I know it might sound like that this committee has gotten to be very partisan, but I'm telling you, we've always operated in a nonpartisan spirit. we believe that the veterans are is a nonpartisan issue, and I certainly commend you for your service. As short time as it might be, you know, the whole blame looked like it's focused on you, and we understand that you just arrived back in February, and you're not responsible for all the sins of the past, and we certainly look forward to continue working with you in the future. And with that, Mr. Bradley, you have a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would ask for a little bit of extra indulgence because I also, like Doc Snyder, did not submit an opening statement. Mr. Secretary, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. Certainly, you've honored the uniform, and we also thank you for your service in the last 5 months. This has probably been a very difficult time, jumping from the frying pan into the fire. And certainly you've seen that this morning. I think all of us in this room and a number of people have left would admit that, as you have accurately, that we have a huge funding problem. One thing that probably hasn't been noted enough is, and I hear this all the time, the VA service, bar none, is the best in the country in terms of medical quality of care. And as we try to deal with the funding issues that all of us have a responsibility for in a bipartisan way, let's also not forget that the quality of care is excellent. And not only is that a tribute to your staff and your predecessors, but the hard work that all of the people throughout our country do in serving our nation's veterans. I would second the comments of a number of people, in particular Congresswoman Brownwaith. I also serve on the Budget Committee, and I worked with Chairman Nussel this year to submit, between the efforts of the two of us, about a $900 million increase to this year's budget, and projected out over the next several years well over $1 billion in the budget. And I was pleased that Chairman Walsh, his mark included $1 billion more than the President's request. And I felt, and I think a lot of people felt, because the vote on that was fairly bipartisan, that you know, the situation in regard to the veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan was well accounted for. And then, unfortunately, the modeling errors, the shortfall, have hit us, and we have to solve this problem. And hopefully, with a supplemental budget today, we will address that, at least to begin with. So here are my questions, and if I have gone over my time a little bit, I ask your indulgence. $975 million, does that do the job for this budget year, and is it, are you certain of that?
Yes, sir. This will do the job and get us through the rest of this fiscal year. Yes.
Have you, because the independent budget writers, and I have my notebook of the testimony that they submitted in February, have you worked with the authors of the independent budget on this $975 million proposal so that we can have faith that outside interests have sort of looked over your shoulder to say, you know what, this is an accurate number that will solve the problem and, you know, give us greater faith that that's the case?
Not specifically with these numbers. We have continuing discussions with the VSOs about budget, and they don't hesitate to express themselves to us about that. But I cannot say that as to these specific categories that, you know, I've listed, that we've had that kind of detailed discussion. No, sir.
And my last question is more one for the future, and as we look to the future, how we can more accurately predict the needs. And I go back to the former chairman of the committee, Chris Smith's bill, which nobody has brought up here today, which called for an independent panel to submit to OMB recommendations based on the VA's recommendations of service, and then that would be incorporated, as I understand it, into the OMB budget submittal. And it would be a more transparent process and a process that hopefully would not have the influence of trying to arbitrarily fit a budget into tight budget parameters, which we all know exist today, but would be a budget submittal transparent that would more accurately reflect the actual needs of budget as opposed the actual needs of veterans as opposed to the needs of a political process for the budget. Is it time, Mr. Secretary, for a format similar to Christmas bill, to say nothing of veterans' health care being mandatory spending?
I don't think that I can answer that right now, Mr. Bradley. I'm not familiar enough with how that panel would work and what would be the juxtaposition of that with the, you know, the constitutional process and the legislative process. I will say I'm interested in taking a look at it. I don't know much about it.
Well, and I would just leave you with this thought. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your indulgence, that first of all, I think we all should appreciate the clarity of the answers that you gave to my colleague from Maine, whose district adjoins mine, that you're going to work with us on a quarterly basis to make sure that the information that we have is up to date, that you'll work with us in a bipartisan fashion, and that the information that you have will be our information. And as part of that, I think it would be appropriate, as we continue with these discussions of how to resolve the, you know, the 06, the 07, and beyond budgets, that you also look at Mr. Smith's proposal. I think it was a very interesting proposal, somewhat modulated back from mandatory spending, but one that would hopefully remove some of the political process out of veterans' health care spending, and something that certainly might be something that would be a model for how to proceed.
Let me just say thank you, Mr. Bradley, for your leadership on this committee, and particularly on the budget committee, you and Ms. Brandwaite, and I know it was a good amendment you were able to incorporate. The gentlelady from South Dakota, Ms. Herseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Secretary, I'd like to reiterate Mr. Bradley's comments as well as others on the committee in thanking you for your very distinguished military service. Your record speaks for itself, as well as your service as Secretary over the last number of months, and your work to address these challenges we're identifying today. And just a couple of questions as some follow-ups, but one I'd like to start out with just in terms of accessibility to various information. Because of the concerns that many of us have had about the potential budget and funding shortfalls, Mr. Evans sent a survey to the VISNs about the budget, and it's our understanding that the surveys have been completed by the field, but they're stuck in central office. Would you please make a priority the return of the survey information to us as the field reported?
Yes, that is sitting on my desk, and I have I've looked at it, and I need to review that, but I would anticipate being able to get that to him soon.
That would be helpful. I mean, you've heard some anecdotal evidence here from various members of the committee about what's happening in their districts at various facilities, so it'd be nice to see what trends and patterns might be out there to better address their concerns and their service to the veterans. We've talked about, not only in last week's hearing, but some today, and I apologize for missing some of the questions, but the models, some of the shortfalls of the modeling. Have there been discussions, either back when we were preparing the 2005 request, or as we are have done so for now 2006, and as the VA is preparing to do for 2007, as it relates to, you know, the 28% to 30% of the shortfall that's based on OIF and OEF, have you talked specifically about not only the projected mental health care needs, but the fact that there, because of the quality of the emergency care in the field, that thankfully we have a higher rate of survivorship among the soldiers? Has that been part of the modifications that may be integrated into the modeling?
Yes, it has. Again, the war it is
a new phenomenon to the model, and certainly for 07, which is what we're really in the middle of right now, it's a very germane category, and that we're trying to understand that as best we can, and we certainly are aware of that phenomenon that you've cited, which is we have relatively more casualties than fatalities, and that most of those will eventually take off their uniform and become veterans and be in our system. Yes, ma'am.
And then let me move to what you've provided in the breakdown and go to the next very large number of the 975, because I have a particular interest, even outside of the work on this committee, on the costs associated with long-term care, and long-term care costs being a ticking time bomb in our entire healthcare system in this country. So specifically when we're talking about the VA system, can you describe, either you, Mr. Secretary, or Dr. Perlin, a little bit more about these two segments here on VA long-term care, why it is that the modeling is so underestimating the cost of the long-term care for the veterans?
I'll ask Dr. Perlin to respond to that.
Thank you very much for the question. There was a technical error in preparation of the 2006 budget on long-term care. Historically, there has not been actuarial data to model long-term care. We now contract with Duke University, and they're developing more reliable estimates to develop actuarial modeling. And just as previous discussion suggested, that things that aren't modeled should be modeled to improve accuracy, long-term care will be incorporated into our modeling and budget projection. So in short, the two elements are, one, we're going to actuarial projection, and two, there was a technical error that underestimated the resource need, and that's being rectified with this.
I appreciate the response, and if you might be willing to share with the committee your ongoing, the results of your ongoing discussions and work with Duke University, so that we're better informed as to what the actuarial modeling will be that they're doing that might actually help us in some of the other work that we're doing on other healthcare-related issues and Medicaid spending and elsewhere to deal with long-term care costs. We'd appreciate that, and thank you, and I'll yield back.
Thank you, Ms. Hurst. Mr. Strickland, recognized for 5 minutes.
Mr. Secretary, I also want to join others who have thanked you for your service to our country. As I said in my opening statement, I did not wear the uniform, and nor our chairman has and does, and others have. And so I hope that nothing that we say here that could be viewed as critical of the VA or the administration of the VA would in any way reflect upon our admiration for the service that you and others have provided to the country. Dr. Snyder's questioning sort of intrigued me a little earlier when he was talking about the modeling. And can you say to me, or perhaps you weren't here at the time, Dr. Perlin, can you say to us as a committee that the recommendations that have come to this committee from the administration have been at least as robust as that suggested by the modeling, or even more robust? Can you tell us that?
Respond.
Yes, the model is incorporated. As I mentioned earlier, the three elements of the budget are the model items, the non-model items, including CHAMP VA, prosthetics, long-term care, state home per diems, and then policies on top of that.
Well, the reason I ask the question is that, you know, it seems that much of the blame for the condition that we find ourselves in now is being attributed to faulty modeling. And so the question that I would ask is, have we received as a committee budget requests that are at least as robust as would be suggested by the modeling?
I'm going to respond, Congressman, and then invite either of my colleagues to comment. I was not here during that formulation.
I know you weren't, Mr. Secretary, and I appreciate that.
But I feel comfortable in saying that The answer is yes, because what has happened is that we've had a real growth spurt, and while it has put more load on the VA system, and it per force is costing more money, thus it's also, and this is the very positive aspect of this whole discussion that we're having, I think, is that people are coming to our facilities in ever greater numbers, and they're coming because we're doing a good job.
I understand that, but what I don't understand is that Secretary Principe sat there and he told this committee that he had requested, I think, $1.3 billion more than came to this committee from the president's budget. Now, was Secretary Principe just simply pulling a number out of the air, or was the secretary's request to the president in line with what the modeling suggested was needed, and did OMB or others decide that was just more money than they were willing to spend? That's the question, and I think it gets to something very basic here as we're trying to sort through this. Dr. Perlin, could you answer that?
In my involvement with this, the model data are used in their entirety.
I'm sorry, sir?
In my experience with this, the model is taken, and as I indicated, there are three elements of the budget going together.
If I can just understand, what I think I'm hearing here is not a clear answer. What I'm hearing is that the administration may be looking at the model or the modeling process as an excuse for what we find here today when other factors were considered, at least two other factors, rather than simply the modeling projections. So maybe we should be, rather than just scrutinizing the effects of the modeling on our current situation, maybe we should look at the other factors as well. One more question quickly, because my time's almost up. Mr. Secretary, for the last two budget periods at least, the President has sent a budget where he's listed management efficiencies as a way to save money. He's also asked for an annual user fee to impose upon veterans as a way to get more resources, an increase in cost of prescription drugs, and the exclusion of hundreds of thousands of priority 8 veterans. My understanding is that you're assuming these cost savings in your future budget projections. That's just not going to happen. This Congress is not going to go along with the President's desire to do these, you know, to impose these costs. So how do you factor that into the model? I mean, the Congress has said on at least two budget periods that they're not going to do this, and we keep getting that from the administration. Do you expect that that is likely to be dropped from the future budget considerations, or are we going to I think it's sort of playing a game because it's not going to happen. It's very clear that the Congress is not going to tolerate it.
I couldn't speculate further out, Congressman, but I think for the 06 budget, where they were in there as requests, that they will not be approved. They did anticipate revenue, so that revenue will need to be replaced because they will not be enacted for 06. Mr. Chairman, could I
yes, Secretary.
Would request, if I could, a recess of just a couple minutes. I need to walk down the hall.
I understand. The committee will stand in recess for 5 minutes.
Why did they do it just before? I was going to ask a question.
I know.
I know.
I mean, if we're going to do modeling in a serious way.
Well, modeling is all about the
No,
modeling is about the information in, and it's all about what kind of information you put in. You don't put the right information in, you can't get a good model.
Thank you.
Somebody get the door for me, please. Mr. Hollingsworth. Thank you. Chair recognizes Ms. Hooley for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to thank the Secretary for appearing today and for your service. We do appreciate that. I have some comments and some questions. I think you've told us that patient care was not being affected by the shortfall this year, but we've seen recent reports that detail that, in fact, patient care has been affected. And again, I'll use the example of Portland VA Hospital, which now is delaying all non-emergency surgery by 6 months. It's eliminating bed because it's short 150 staff. They needed $13 million in equipment and got $2 million. How do you explain this contradiction? Thank you.
Thank you, Congresswoman, for that question. I'm aware of some of the challenges that have occurred at Portland, and there has been a turnover of senior management in the network, and in fact, working with Max Lewis, who in fact I'm spearing from our central office here, to make sure that the services are delivered more timely, more effectively, more reliably.
Thank you very much. And again, the people that are in the system and are being taken care of think they get a great treatment. It is the waiting list and elimination of beds, and that waiting list keeps getting longer and longer. Mr. Secretary, I just have a question because I don't understand this. If you knew about the shortfall in April, why did it take you 2 months to let us know?
Well, as I've testified, Congresswoman, I actually, in March, sent a letter to the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, and I sent, on April 5th, sent a letter to the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, indicating that the trends were up and that we were looking at reallocating resources to cover this. Dr. Perlin testified in the Senate on April 7th, responded with a post-hearing letter on April 12th, acknowledging that we were making shifts for operational needs in the healthcare delivery. April 19th, we briefed here on this. April 21st, I met with the director of the OMB on this subject.
Mr. Secretary, can we get those letters? Because at least I didn't receive the letter and didn't know about it, so I don't know about the rest of the committee members, but if we could get that letter, I'd really appreciate it. You know, as you talk about modeling, I've had a little experience in that, not much, but I know it depends, your model depends on what information goes into the model. And when I got this list, I was actually sort of blown away by the fact that in the 205, and again, I know you've only been here a short time. I know how hard it is to take over in a new spot in the middle of a budget season. But to not forecast the impact of extended continuing operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, both for 205 and 06, I mean, that just sort of blows me away. I mean, the war is the elephant sitting in the middle of the room. How could we not have put that into our model? Anyone that wants to answer, I'm just...
Well, I'll take another crack at it.
Okay.
Because, again, this lag time in developing budgets in this system, as I said, we're working on 07 now, and we're modeling 04 data. So when we were doing 05, we were modeling 02. There was no Operation Iraqi Freedom. But we monitor as we're into the year. I mean, we're not just sitting there thinking that this, you know, this is somehow all going to magically work. This is monitored, and through the first 6 months of this year, it was operating right on the plan, and it wasn't. I mean, we could see
you know, the, some trends that we were looking at in our monthly reviews, but it was basically in the framework.
Right, but we knew how many people were over there and when they were coming back. I'm just surprised it wasn't in there. I have one quick last question because I know my time's running out. This is a follow-up to Ms. Brown's question from Florida. We were told last year that we were $1.3 billion short. I offered an amendment. Several people have offered amendment to backfill that $1.3 billion. The Senate asked for $1.5 billion. You've come to us with $975 million. Why didn't you ask for the $1.5 billion? I'm really concerned that what you asked for is so tight, and then if there's any slippage or any shortfall, you'll be back again. I mean, why didn't you ask for the $1.5 billion? Is there a reason?
Well, we asked for what we've calculated that we're going to need to get through the end of fiscal 05, which is another 90 days. As to 06, which starts, as you know, on October 1st, we are asking for approximately a million six billion in addition to or on top of the netting out of those legislative proposals that we've asked for in that, as we've discussed, will probably not be approved. If they're not approved, that's another $1.1 billion that we will need.
But again, you can always carry over that money. I guess my concern is when we knew last year that we were $1.3 billion short.
For 05?
We knew that we were short that amount of money, at least according to the former secretary. I'm through with my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Suthan. Ms. Berkley, you're now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I could say without fear of contradiction that this hearing has not been the high point of my congressional career. When Mr. Snyder mentioned that in February, when I gave my opening statement, we calculated that there was an $800 billion shortfall, I can assure you that I am not a financial genius. I don't have a modeling background. My staff is young and doesn't have a background in budgets, but we were able to look at the submission. We were able to look at the needs, look at what was going to be cut in anticipation of the budget request, and come up with a number that turns out to be pretty accurate. And if we could figure that out, it would seem to me, with all of the expertise and knowledge in your department, that you could have taken a good look at that and realized that we had a serious shortfall far sooner than you acknowledged. I've got a piece of paper here that I'd like to submit for the record that demonstrates that the VA underestimates health care workloads every year. And it shows here what the VA submission is, and then the bar next to it has the actual figures. And 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005, the submission is always far below the actual. So I would figure, after this happens time and time again, that we would figure out how to do this better. And we need to do this. I hope you take a look at this, and I would like to submit it for the record. I'd also like to, and I hope that you read this too, it's A War of Disabilities, Iraq's Hidden Costs Are Coming Home by Ronald Glazer, and it talks about what to expect when our soldiers come back and they are veterans, and what they are going to need from their government, both in health care and medical and mental health care. That's something we need to take into consideration. The information is here. I am sure the VA has it, and we need to take it into account when you come before us with requests for funding for our veterans. I have many interests when it comes to veterans. I concentrate on what's important to my district because that's my job, and I'm the only person here that would forward the interests of the veterans in Southern Nevada. I know on Tuesday, in front of the Senate committee, you responded to Senator Ensign from Nevada's question discussing plans for a veterans medical complex in Vegas and the funding for the construction of this facility, which is in the 2006 budget, and you assured him that it will not be affected by the department's shortfall. Can you give me that assurance on the record here today? So we have it in both committees, mm-hmm. on both sides of the aisle and in both houses.
Yes, ma'am. For the 05, the cycle that we're still in, we have architecture and planning in there, $60 million. That's, as you know, that's underway, and that is not in jeopardy. And for 06, there is $200
million.
$199. And hoping to be able to start construction by the probably late in that fiscal year and get that project done.
All right. I thank you for that. And with all due respect, and I know your background, and it's truly exemplary and extraordinary, I think you need to know more about the department that you are heading when you come back and testify again to this committee. And I say that with all due respect. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berkley. Mr. Secretary, one thing that we haven't discussed here today, and we will have a follow-on, we will continue our oversight with regard to the methodology of the health modeling. It's the accounts receivables. I know that on June 10th there was a briefing for the majority and minority staff whereby we were informed that the accounts receivables as of that date was in excess of $600 million. Can you tell me what the number is today and how the accounts receivables was taken into consideration with regard to the request that you had made to me earlier in this hearing?
I'm going to call on staff for the specific numbers, Mr. Chairman, and proceed with an overview on I have a real emphasis on increasing our collections. I think that it's also worth noting that the department has done a pretty exemplary job in recent years in going from collecting very little to now collecting in excess of $2 billion, I think. There are difficulties in this, systemic difficulties, which we're also working on, particularly on the IT side of our endeavor, because the hospitals have dissimilar back office procedures. Each of these hospitals, it seems like, is sort of growing up on its own, and they're not as standardized as they need to be. And that is a goal of mine, is to enhance that so that the IT part that's needed to refine this system of collections can be put in place. But that I don't want to minimize the difficulty and challenge of that because of the dissimilar systems there seems to be in each of these hospitals. Having said that, let me call on Dr. Perlin to try to respond to you specifically.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Mr. Chairman, just as the Secretary said, this year the total collections are approaching almost $2 billion. The goal is 1.879. This reflects double-digit growth for each of the past years. In fact, it's up 200% since FY01 when it was really less than $600 million. But our ability to collect is improving. We'll benefit from the information systems. I need to get back to you with the exact number on the accounts receivable that is outstanding. I believe Mark Loper, our chief business officer, would have that at hand.
Would you concur that the number that was briefed to minority and majority staff that it's in excess of $600 million is still accurate, and the number could even be larger?
I'd have to get back to you. I would be remiss in speculating in terms of not knowing exactly what debt is truly collectible and what debt is not good debt.
All right. I'm not interested in quibbling with you, Mr. Secretary, nor your staff. We recognize that, you know, even in that briefing, when we'd say that with regard to the uncollected third-party debt ranges between $1 billion and $3 billion, that's a pretty wide variance. And we don't even know what the total universe is to be collected. So, Dr. Perlin, I mean, Mr. Secretary, and to the General Counsel, the three of you, we are trying to be helpful to you. So in cooperation with the appropriations staff, you know, we did the pilot out in Ohio, and now this committee recently just passed to do a second pilot, a competitive pilot, for you to improve this. Secretary, when you mentioned the IT, we want, and matter of fact, are sending you dollars to the business office so that you can do the redesign of the business processes on collection. So when you're doing this modeling, and obviously in your modeling you also do your accounts receivables, and when you want to, if we're going to move into this era of the sevens and eights and caring for the veterans for non-disabled illnesses and injuries, we have to be able to collect those monies, because Congress said that we will open up the system based on the need and the means. And so in your modeling, if you're saying, well, we think that we're going to be collecting this money, and now that we got $600 million or more that's not even being collected, wow. I mean, we have problems in this business process systems for which have to be corrected. So with regard to this legislation on the second pilot, to the General Counsel, please proceed at all due speed, would be my request of you. And Secretary, if you have any follow-on that you'd like to make on accounts receivables, I would ask of your comment.
We'll get back to you as quickly as possible on the specific answer as to that $600 million.
All right. If you're able to do that in the next several hours, please contact my staff so I can be in touch with the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Secretary, I apologize that I had to leave the room. I took your request of a supplemental appropriation, notified the leadership. I've spoken with Chairman Walsh. They are drafting the legislation. I am most hopeful that sometime before we break on this July recess, that Congress will act upon your request. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We will do that. I appreciate you coming before the committee. I appreciate, Dr. Perlin, your candor in response to this last week and the work that you've done with us in the meantime. And, Mr. Secretary, you also were feeling picking up the same evidence that every member of this committee was doing with regard to our own VA hospitals and our veterans. I know you proposed workaround solutions. You were trying to see if you could do it within your budget. I respect you for your leadership to come before this committee and to make this request for a supplemental appropriation, and we will be acting on it hopefully today.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
No, we're going to, if I understand you correctly, we're going to request the amount that's on this sheet.
Is the $975 million. Yes. The only thing that may change is I need to talk about this accounts receivable question.
Okay. But my second question, Mr. Chairman, looking at the sheet the department passed out, looks like they cut off something over here when they Xerox this off, and I'm just wondering, since the department requested additional funding for 06, if that is a case,
I asked for that to be copied, and they had notes written on the side. I said, I don't want your notes, just give me what you can right now.
Okay, since they have requested for 06, can we get the category similar to this of what the additional?
They have not. As far as I know, the Secretary, we are going to work with the administration with regard to an 06 budget amendment. So what was done today will be the supplemental on 05.
What's done for today?
Today will be a supplemental appropriation, I'm hopeful, will be done for fiscal year 05 in the amount of $975 million. We will continue to work with the administration with regard to a budget amendment for which they will submit to us that it could occur in July or in September. And that's why we will continue, this committee will continue its further oversight with regard to this modeling and methodology on how we get this right. This is a pretty, well, we're going to get it right.
Yep. But my question is, they had mentioned that the peers at 06 are going to be short $1.6 billion. Under that assumption, they must know where that shortfall is going to be. And I guess my question to you is, could we have them, and it might change, could we have them provide us where their assumption currently is?
We're going to continue that dialogue, Mr. Show, and I'll assure you you'll be a part of that process. Ms. Herthas.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just a quick follow-up before we adjourn to Dr. Perlin, based on some questioning I was doing on long-term care.
One question.
You had mentioned that the projections were off for long-term care because of a technical error. And so if you might, in addition to what I requested about what you're working on with Duke University, if you could provide the committee and staff with a copy of the long-term care projections for 06 and for 05, given that's what we were talking about earlier, given that that's a substantial part of the shortfall, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Just want to make sure you concur with the actions of the committee here for us to focus on the redesign of the business processes to capture the total universe on these collections and to move at due speed, correct?
Oh, yes, sir. Indeed. And we welcome your support.
All right. Very good. This hearing is concluded.